Facets of Fate presents the Chronologist Chronicles. You'll never see it coming.
I like how mine is the most fizzy one because it's a seltzer.
Oh, was I speaking close enough to the mic?
Oh yeah, that's a good question.
You are now, Mike.
Mike,
just
Mike.
Get this little foley here. Yes, Nat.
I was just gonna tell these guys that. So Remy went into the restaurant to go pick up my car key, and I guess that she called. She was like, "Hey, is Brad here?" And
the
everyone
owner.
Was like, "What? Who?" Everyone at work calls Brad Bish. And I only thought of that because I referred to him as Brad.
They call me Bishop.
Do they?
Yes.
I thought it was Bish. B-I-S-H.
Sometimes they call me Bish. as like a fun little, you know.
A little elbow, wink, wink.
Yeah. As like a, we know what that's internet slang for. And then the owner called me Bish once and I gave him the side eye. Like, you don't know what that means. So you can't, you're not allowed to say that word.
You're not permitted to call me that.
You don't spend time on the internet. You're not allowed to say that. Are we ready for our recap? Last time in our interludes, two stab men, you met with Brosh. You explained that you were looking for information on curses, specifically Fortson's, but also your own. He said that he would come take a look at Fortson to ascertain the nature of the curse. But when you explained that you also had a fishborn curse yourself, he said that he didn't know what the fuck that would be because his knowledge was more, you know, celestial, demonic, and you're religious in nature than in like nature, like natural magics and stuff like that. But hey, you know, he probably will give you like a thumbs up, be like, best of luck, bud. Hope you don't get magic, you know, cancer or something. You stopped somewhere in a marketplace to get a giant elk shank to feed your crew, because out of all the characters that I've ever had the pleasure of DMing for, Stabman's the only one that cares about food, which is fantastic in my mind. But you had to spend a lot of time doing that before you managed to get back to the CUHQ. In the meantime, Zyfel and Snarl, you made your way back to the CUHQ without making any sort of stops or anything like that, because you were expecting to meet back there with Stabman in due time and didn't want to dilly-dally around for, you know, any, you know, stale spaghetti or McDurgan's drive-thru or anything like that. You know, stuff that I had to cut from the last episode because Nat seemed very concerned about whether we were going to play that scene out or not.
The spaghetti?
Oh, yeah.
So I just cut all that out because it didn't go anywhere. And it was just, Nat was just like, are we actually going to do the scene? I'm just like, you chose the scene. So if
Did
we're
I
not going to
choose it,
we're not going to do it, then I guess I'll just cut it.
I look up with a continuity error full of spaghetti in my mouth.
You did get back to the CUHQ. You met with Broadbarrow. He asked you about your various research topics, you know, asked, you know, why Stabman was taking so long. Of course, you didn't, you know, he went on a shopping spree when last you parted. So both of you were just like, I don't know. I guess he's still spending his, you know, his money on whatever. You were starting to question the scribes on the progress, but then Stabman did bust into the headquarters. Was unable to find the office at first with his poor investigation check, which was mostly just for fun. But Brosh did arrive with him in the office. Everybody was pretty dumbstruck when Stabman introduced Brosh the Faithful as, you know, a good acquaintance of yours. Broadbarrow, notably, as the other NPC in the room that the DM has to voice, was notably silent while, you know, Brosh was talking. But then did agree to take Brosh up to where Fortson was resting so that he could ascertain the nature of the curse. While doing so, Stabman went out back into the yard to cook up this elk in a nice giant open pit of fire with Galifax, the only Minotaur, in Immerfell. while Zyfel and Snarl patiently awaited elk meat, I guess. You were talking to the two scribes, so far unnamed, but one a full orc and one a half elf, on their various books. The half elf was mostly just seemed introverted and shake waiting in the corner. But the orc was very intrigued, Zyfel, by the title of the book that you mentioned, because the titles of y'all's books were extremely similar. The one he was reading being called The Dark Hunger, and the book that you had read titled A Dark and Creeping Hunger. So that was an interesting little tidbit. He felt as though maybe there were more threads connecting these two titles than you could have anticipated, just in the names and in the nature of their books. And he said that he was going to ask Arthur Broadbarrow to be on the expedition to the mining town of Vermalion whenever they set off.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's fine. You have a question?
No, I didn't know if you're going to mention this or not, but I sent a letter back to the Varmskasia.
That's right.
Basically telling them the location, and then basically telling them these guys are heading out. You might be able to spy on what they're doing or figure out what they're
coded with.
That is correct. Yeah. Yes. This is why I wrote that note, so that I wouldn't forget that, and then I forgot it anyways. Again, not sure why you're letting me DM this campaign. An encoded with a deception check of 12, your thieves can't note in a dead drop where your Varmskasia contacts would know to pick it up. So who knows how long it'll take for somebody to pick it up? Who knows how long it'll take for somebody to decipher it? But hey, you did your due diligence. You let your mercenary assassino brethren know what possible lead you might have on
something.
your drow artifacts. Yeah, who knows what they'll find. In the meantime, or rather after enjoying your elk meat after Stabman has rejoined you in the office with the scribes, and after Stabman gave you to his various gifts of a poisoner's kit and a new shovel to replace your old shovel. I like to imagine the shovel just has a stab man's face like stamped on the back of, you know, the shovel.
So yeah, his face like drawn on it. Like,
this is your new family now.
I had a perfectly good shovel before, but I guess.
So that's the only difference plus between. One shovel.
Yeah. Plus one to all dig checks.
Yep. Yeah. You know what? It's a plus one shovel.
Nice.
Plus one shovel.
Let me go into my character improvised
sheet weapon.
And see if I can.
It's not magic.
I'm going to go ahead.
What if I try to dig out the heart of my enemy?
It plus does one damage.
One. Will it have to be dead first, but then you'll get a plus one to it.
No.
Checks. All right.
Have you ever tried to stab someone with a spade, Mike? It's not easy.
Have you?
It's not easy.
Stab man's shovel. Plus one. Man, this system kind of sucks.
Does it have a plus one for burying things too?
plus one dig, plus one bury.
Sure, plus one for the
uses of a shovel.
The shovel uses. Did I miss anything so far? I guess. Do we have any questions thus far? There's only really one more thing.
The stacking in the hallway.
Yeah, the stacking in the hallway. That's not all fucked up because she's wearing armor.
Because I'm Snarl.
You are wearing armor, and you told me that you wanted to be stealthy. So
I said I made the mystique of calling out myself as sneaking around.
You said I'm gonna sneak around. You said the magic word. Snarl, you rolled poorly with your googly-eyed hands puppet of Stabman. You were the only one to fall. I allowed Zyfel to remain hidden if he so desired.
But he did not.
Chose not to for whatever reason.
If there's one of us, the other two are probably close by. That's why I figured.
But yeah. And then of course, Arthur again doesn't
care.
Believe you as soon as the both of you would like just show up and checks the hallway for Stabman. Stabman's not there. But of course,
he's invisible.
He's not trying to hide anything, or at least it doesn't seem like he's trying to hide anything. But that's where we are, I believe. I think that's basically it for
recap.
For the recap, there's a lot of just you talking about the research topics that you did, eating some elk meat, meeting Brosh for everybody except for Stabman, and determining that Fortson's curse was a lot more severe than Brosh anticipated, so he'll have to prepare overnight to do whatever it is that Brosh is going to do. I don't know, cast, remove greater curse or something. So
greater restoration
or some bullshit. Yeah.
And in the meantime, what are we going to get to, lads?
Get drunk off mead and eat some more elk.
And that's the end of the episode.
Done.
Normally I'd say I won't stop you, but I will stop you. I'm gonna send a fireball to the CUHQ.
Oh no, another building blows up.
Wait. Another building blows up. That's my threat to you.
I thought that was an original concept.
No, that happened in Waterdeep. That happened in Everhunt. If you don't get your shit together, it's gonna happen here.
When we essentially are set for life, a building blows up.
Deus Ex fireball.
I thought it was funny. I thought it was a funny little Deus Ex in Waterdeep. It's like, hey, if you made it a third through the campaign, blow up their base of operations. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me, dude?
It says that in the wizard's book.
Yeah, it says a fireball crashes into the Troll Skull Manor. That's their building gets set on fire and shit. I'm like, oh, fuck. So what do we want to do? At least for like Xyphel and Snarl, you're here in this this room with Fortson, Broadbarrow, and Brosh.
Do we know the origins of this curse? Like what type of magic it was?
So actually, I guess here's a little recap for you, since this is more like my headcanon pre-adventure, like what happened in the shrine. You basically got to what appears to be like a crumbled sort of altar room. And Fortson was doing some stuff, and some kind of like demonic entity just kind of appeared and fucked up the whole place. Like waves of magic like knocked everybody out. And when you came to Fortson, he appeared to be like very badly burned with like a lot of like black and purple like scar marks all over his body and stuff. And you were the three to drag him out. At that point, there weren't any of the interns left. They were all like dead on the ground or had been eviscerated or drug away by harpies at that point.
So was Fortson essentially Gandalf with the Balrog and we were running for our lives? Or
no, it seemed like Fortson was doing something to figure out like the mystery of this altar, triggered something, possibly on accident, possibly on purpose, probably didn't intend to put himself in a coma.
Okay, so it was Indiana Jones and the giant boulder. Okay.
Yeah, except if the giant boulder crushes Indy.
But he lives
and he's also in a coma.
Yeah. It's good because it was made out of styrofoam.
It's not that heavy. Yeah, it was like 20 pounds. It wasn't that much.
So, if Brosh, I'm assuming is one of the most powerful people or beings on this plane, needs to prepare a spell, then I'm assuming this is very powerful magic that cursed Fortson.
Are you saying this out loud?
Yeah.
Okay. Brosh nods.
Certainly, I do not want to risk wasting time if Fortson has been in recovery for several days already. I want to make sure that I tackle this issue full force.
Is there anything that we can do to aid in their preparations?
No, I think I just need to gather some materials from the temple and make sure that I have, not to be alarming, backup as necessary.
Backup? Do you think that, I don't know, do you think there's going to be danger?
So, again, not to alarm anybody, but possibly Fortson is now an unconscious conduit for a demonic entity.
For a demonic entity? Oh, yeah. No, that's not alarming at all.
So
what if he mysteriously wakes up before you return or can conduct your rituals?
He kind of like side eyes to Broadbarrow for a second and then says, I'll be back as quick as I can.
So it's like when your doctor says, huh, that's interesting.
Oh gosh, the worst thing to hear.
I've literally never told anybody that came to me help, huh, that's interesting, because of how terrible it is to say those words out loud.
No, there's a first time for everything. I'm just throwing that out there.
Okay, well.
Ross turns to Fortson. You know, it is interesting, though.
Oh gosh, he just said it. He said it.
Are you going to try to wake him up now?
He like looks at you and just like slaps Fortson across the face. That was the first thing that I tried.
Okay.
Does Fortson move?
He needs to prepare a spell slot.
Brosh wasted all of his spell slots impressing random passerbys on the way here.
Creating water.
Level 23.
Creating water to walk on.
Yeah. He divine the smote, like, you know, the air. It was really cool looking, but it was all of his spell slots, you know?
Okay, well, if you don't need any help, hey, AB, you need any help with any of these new level one initiates?
Need any help with any level one initiates? No,
whatever level we are. What level Scientologists we are?
We can't say that. We'll be subversive people.
No. I have to cut that out.
We're chronologists.
Whatever level chronologists union members we are now.
You are a rank two initiate. So you're asking Broadbarrow if he needs help. Like,
we got
wrangling any rank one initiates?
No. I'm basically asking them, well, it looks like you guys have it handled here. Anything we can do around the Chronologist Union? I'm pretty free for the rest of the day. Or any word on a new mission or assignment? Oh, God. Another book.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my God. He's pulling another book. It's that that comic of the dude who plays a game against death to win his life back, and he's playing D&D. Grim Reaver's like, oh fuck, he's pulling out another book. No, because I forgot the orc's name from last time, so I want to.
Oh, I don't think you gave him.
I had rolled for it. Forgot it or didn't say it out loud. So.
Yeah, I don't remember writing it down.
I didn't write it down, but I know.
I think that was towards the end of the session where we're like, yep, and like, yeah, you go like talk to, you know, Brosh or whatever, and he hadn't like actually received his name as of yet. So then
Kelsey Grammer the Orc shows up.
Awesome.
He looks just like Frasier.
I was gonna say, is this Cheers Frasier or is this Frasier?
Frasier.
Oh, so where he completely abandons.
I could give him a French name. Ooh, that's kind of fun actually.
Do it.
A French orc? Ooh.
Oh,
whatever,
man.
The stupid orc name I gave him before is dumb. I'm
gonna use that. Pompous and arrogant? Okay.
88. That's actually really close to what I rolled.
I also really like that because of like the connections between France and Canada and the fact that Snarl has a Nova Scotian accent.
Oh no, okay. We're all French Canadians.
All right, now I'm gonna stick it. I'm gonna keep to it. I rolled an 88 in the Xanthar's Guide for anybody who wants to go look at the name. You can tell that I'm not lying.
Oh no. I love this preface, but I hate it.
You ask if there's anything else for, you know, that you can do to help the Chronologist Union while you're waiting for this to happen. And Barbaro says, well, you know, Robert downstairs, I believe. Robert the Orc.
Okay.
Robert.
That's not an orcish name.
Well, you didn't grow up in orcish lands. So.
Tragic.
He's only half orc.
No, he's a full orc.
Oh, he's a full orc.
He's a full orc and a half elf are the scribes that were assigned to your books. Yeah, the half elf is the one Shakewing that is as of yet unnamed. Robert is the full orc that noted the similarity in titles. I believe Robert had uncovered some interesting factoids and tidbits in his book. Like I said, we discussed earlier, he wanted to send out Chronologist Union folks to go check out Vermilion. Bits only a day or two of travel up to Vermilion if you wanted to put together a couple initiates. Robert wanted to join and go up that way.
Sure, that's something I could do. I can go talk to him, see if, are there any other, like, so Robert and any other initiates that are available? Like,
oh, sure. They'll remain unnamed until they come back alive.
Yeah, but I can go to an area and say you, you, and you.
I have a few initiates in mind already, okay. So.
It's like those World War I movies where they're like, I need three men!
Yeah, that's what I was going to do.
I need six boots on the ground. Who's got them? Yeah. Okay. I mean, if you're going to take initiates,
they're all red shirts, so I don't worry about it.
I'll randomly determine names for them, and if they make it back alive, I'll let you know what their names are. If you ask them what their names are, hey, I'll find a way narratively for them to not give you their name.
You were at my sister's wedding!
Zyphil, we're cousins! How do you all remember me? Oh, Harpy, just... We were underground, but a harpy somehow carries this, like, drow away.
Carries him down?
Yeah, down further and further underground. Plot twist, harpies are from underground in this world.
They're just upside down harpies. They have, like, wings for legs and, like, lady
arms. Oh, no!
And migraine of ours.
That's so concerning. I hate that.
And a bird head.
Bird head.
Okay.
Right. Until Fortson wakes up, truly, we don't really know what he was after, why these books were on his list, what information he was hoping to gather. If it's true that, you know, he activated this altar incorrectly, perhaps the information was somewhere in these books, or so he had hoped. But everybody is, you know, you've read their books, you know, they've read the Dark Hunger and the Fallen Tethyamar. Well, so far we haven't found anything demonic related, so we'll just have to wait.
Okay. Well, thank you for the information, and I'll go down and talk to Robert.
Oh, it's with a hard...
Oh, Robert? Okay.
Robert.
Rob? Go Rob.
Okay. Hey there, Robbie.
Hey, Bob. Hey, Bob.
I've literally never called him by a name other than Robert, so I'm highly curious
how he reacts,
to see how he's going to react to be called Bobby.
I'm going to stride downstairs and go,
oh, no.
Hey, Bobby.
As you stride downstairs, Statman is diligently doing the dishes of the meal he cooked.
Galifax is helping you.
Yes.
Of course. You got to take care of your materials.
Exactly. And I have a little, like, plate set aside for Brosh.
Aww.
yeah, I guess.
And I guess Earther, too.
What do you want to do? Zyphil and Snarl with this information, knowing that Brosh is going to be back tomorrow, but he's got to grab some components and back up.
I'd love to be there and watch some guy get exercised, but I think this little excursion is a little bit more interesting, so I'll go talk to Robert.
Yeah, sorry to make you choose between two interesting things, but, you know, do you want to watch Forsen get exercised or go check out an abandoned platinum mine?
Yeah.
Platinum mine.
Abandoned platinum mine? Yeah.
Let's go do that. Absolutely. Snarl cracks her knuckles and goes, that sounds way more interesting than just farting around for another couple hours, you know?
Yeah.
If by another couple hours you mean like 12 hours, yeah. You could set out tonight. And it'll be dark on the way there, so, you know, that's good for Zyphil.
Do we have any map on the way? Because all I was told is basically there's this dwarven town that leads to Vermilion.
Let's just see.
We are in a chronologist unit. I'd assume there'd be some sort of treasure map.
I mean, Broadbarrow knows where it is, so if nothing else, he can give you directions. But let's just see, shall we?
The way that you're saying that makes me nervous.
Yeah.
We walk straight into the sarcasm.
You can go left or right.
A tale of tragedy and terror. Wow.
One trail goes to certain doom. One goes to certain riches.
Yeah, it's the... what the fucking arcade game with the knight?
Oh, Dragon's Lair.
Yeah, Dragon's Lair. It's Dragon's Lair. You got two options every time. 50-50 shot. One of them just kills you.
Sweet.
Oh, I haven't played this game, and now I must.
Oh, it's a...
Do you have a Wii? You can borrow it.
I have a Switch and a PlayStation 4.
It's an old, like, arcade game that is meant to eat your quarters. It's all, like, press up on the control stick and press this button. If you don't do it in 2.5 seconds, you're dead.
Yeah, the origin of QuickTime events.
Yeah.
And, of course, every single time, I can't remember the knight's name, but he dies horribly. And his, like, it'll just literally be his, like, skin melting off as his bones are, like, falling to the ground.
The game over screen, when you've run out of lives, is, like, him as, like, a skeleton or a zombie with his arms crossed. He just, like, plops down to the screen. He's like, how could you kill me like that, bro? He's real pissed off at you.
They re-release it on the Wii, and you can get Dragon's Lair and Dragon's Lair Deluxe or 2 or whatever.
There was a second one, yeah.
Yeah, and you could just play it as much as you want, and all you have to do is remember, is it left or right or up or down? Or...
Oh, it's the same every time. Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. The QuickTime events are the same every time, pretty much, because it was meant to eat your quarters. There's like 50 QuickTime events.
Right. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to get sidetracked.
Right. So that's fine. I just wanted to make sure that I got all the information correct before I, you know, got myself into trouble with this officially published content.
It's very important.
Right. Broadbarrow knows. I mean, he knows the town of Vermilion. So if you want to ask him to see if he has like a map, or if the Chronologist Union has a map or something, you know, leading into the mountain somewhere, he could probably grab one for you.
Yeah. I guess before I leave, are you aware of a map that leads to the town, or at least close by?
Are you looking to set out right away?
That would be the plan.
Well, sure. Give me a second. I'll go to my office in the drawing room. I'll be right back. And after just a few moments, he seems to come back and produces a map for you that details a pathway leading into the mountains. The closest piece of civilization, the last bastion of society, as it were, before you get into the peaks of the mountains, into the rather, you know, treacherous trails, is a little outpost town called Marin. And Broadbear informs you that would probably be a good place to stop in before you push further into the peaks and valleys.
Okay. Marin, M-A-R-Y-N?
M-A-E-R-I-N.
R-I-N. Marin. And can I tell how far, like, basically, is this like, how far the journey is it to Marin and then Vermilion?
If we call it
like halfway
mid-afternoon now, if you were to set off here soon, you would probably make it.
For continuity's sake, mm-hmm. It was evening time.
Was it evening already?
Yeah.
Okay, if you were to set out now, it would probably be just after midnight when you arrive. At Marin, specifically, the little outpost town. It would take you a little bit more travel after that to get to Vermilion.
Okay, well, that sounds doable. We can head out, make our way over, and then continue going in the morning, break it down.
Sounds good to me. So thank you, Mr. Thank you, Broadbarrow, for your information. And I'll head down to see Robert, see what other information he's found.
I'll go wrangle up a couple of the scouts as well that I had anticipated sending into the mountains. We'll have the six of you set out
downstairs soon. Now.
I assume that you've all gathered in the same place.
Statman finishes, you know, setting aside the clean dishes and says, "We also need 6,000 barbarians."
That'd be ideal, we're not honestly.
You're talking about like provisions and people and stuff, and you're like 6,000 ball bearings.
Was I raise a
finger? Oh, I thought you said barbarians. No,
ball bearings. That's what I heard.
Barbarians.
Yeah, Broadbarrow's like, I'm not sure there are that many barbarians left in these lands.
Speaking of mountain prep equipment, would we be able to borrow some? Or...
Yeah, is there
some
don't worry, purchase? I have Statman's shovel. It's fine.
I have.
Plus one.
I have rope and pitons and hammer.
And if we're talking about provisions, if you feel like you need your mountain climbing materials, sure, I'll see what we have available here at the Chronologist Union from
previous initiates?
Well, from the map. Well, from the map, is it through the mountains or over the mountains?
Yeah, you're just gonna be walking through like mountain passes, but
I mean, like,
what? I don't know what you're planning on.
Under mountain.
Oh no, you're not going like underneath the mountain. No, like okay. The map that he gave you, the most like direct path is probably the one through the mountain.
Okay. Passes. So I guess whatever provisions you would spare.
It was possible that there would be mine shafts leading from the dwarf hole Druzmar up straight through to Vermilion. But then you'd have to travel underground. You'd have to go to the dwarves, talk to them and see if they'd be willing to reopen these, long abandoned mine shafts and then traverse these shafts vertically. So probably the easier of the two paths is going to be just going through the mountains.
Yeah. So if you have spare climbing equipment that you can provide us with, that would be greatly appreciated.
Sure. Now, why are 6,000 ball bearings considered mountainous provisions there, Mr. Stabman?
They're essential.
Describe three scenarios in which 6,000 ball bearings is useful.
One. We lose our way. We need to place a single shiny ball bearing on the ground, and then we find our way home.
He raises one finger. Okay.
Two. There is an enemy with many legs, and we must put them on the ground.
Oh, like caltrops, but rounder.
Or they may fall, and then we hit them.
Describe an animal that you expect to come across that has more than four legs.
Giant spider.
Giant spider.
Giant spider.
He holds up a second finger. All right.
Three. Emergency rations.
Well, I'm interested to hear about this one too, actually.
Even if they have no nutritional value, they still make the stomach feel full.
I'm gonna have you make a persuasion check on that third point.
Iron is a very healthy supplement that we all should ingest from time to time.
You know, I actually am gonna be pushing back on this one too.
Nine.
Well, here's the thing: these ball bearings are made out of steel, not iron.
Then they come out smoother.
He goes.
That's a good point.
Okay.
I will give you...
We can do it with 4,000.
I'll give you 2,000.
Three and 200?
Two? Where are we? 2,000.
2,000 works.
They're not easy to make. They're very small. Are there any other, player's handbook, mountain climbing, dungeoneering provisions or whatever?
10-foot like pole. Requests?
Oh, what time of the year is it?
Keep in mind, you have your purse, as it were, your company credit card right now is sitting at 100 gold because you're rank 2 initiates. So you could just ask him for like 100 gold worth of stuff, but then you wouldn't have any more money to spend on, bribing people or whatever in Marin and Vermilion and stuff.
Yeah.
Could you just give me a moment to pull up the player's handbook so I can actually look at their list of equipment as opposed to being like, it sure would be nice if we had crampons.
A 10-foot pole.
Oh, even better. Here, Mike, you take this. I'll look it up.
Do you guys have rope?
I have
50 feet.
I have an archaeologist pack, so I don't have rope, but I have other things that are helpful. Like I have a bullseye lantern. I have a mining pick. I have a shovel.
Oh, I have 1,000 ball bearings.
They're nice. We have.
So now you have 3,000 ball bearings.
We have 4,000 ball bearings.
Shoot, I have rope as well. I have 50 feet of rope.
Torches. I know most packs come with torches and
I have
rope.
A piton, yeah. Rope.
I have pitons.
I would like to get a like heavy winter jacket.
It's like summertime though.
It's springtime.
Well, it's also
springtime. Yeah, it's mid springtime. A lot of heavy rains. That's why the shrine was revealed in the first place. Was mudslides and stuff. So yeah, keep that in mind. It is mid spring. You go up to the mountains. It's probably going to be cold. You might see heavy rain again.
There are three ponchos.
Sure. You just have three ponchos. Do I count that as like a cloak? Totally fine. Or call a cloak a poncho? Totally fine.
If you have one in the storeroom, we need one potion of water breathing.
I'm not going to say no, but...
Why don't you just roll me a pure luck check? Just roll me 1d20, no modifiers. And if you roll an 18+, There'll be one potion of water breathing in their like treasury storage room.
There is not.
There is not.
You know what? It might be wise to ask, does the Chronologist Union have a grappling hook by any chance? I think that could be helpful if we fall down a chasm or anything like that.
Sure. Do you need cold iron, wrought iron, steel, mithril?
He like reveals a closet just full of grappling.
Just straight up full. Yeah.
The mithril is overpriced. Go for the steel.
Right. I'll go ahead and take a steel
yeah,
one.
Yeah, so you can get a regular grappling hook. Yeah, that's
fine. Cool. Yeah, I think that would be very helpful given what we're about to go do.
In addition, if you want us to take notes, maybe parchment, quill, inkwell.
You'll have Robert with you. He's a scribe. He'll be taking notes. If you don't want to, he may be able to part with some of his materials if you want your own.
I look over at my scribe.
Yeah, Almond Joy. He's just
and
like,
I like shake my head no to him, like sorry.
He's just like, I may not even be coming with you in the mountains. This sounds dangerous as fuck.
It could be fun though.
Almond Joy, haven't you ever had a desire for an adventure, a big old journey?
I mean,
I know you have. I know you have.
Why don't you make a persuasion check?
With disadvantage?
No, just a regular one. I thought about advantage or disadvantage.
All right, persuasion. That's okay. I still have minus one to persuasion.
Incredible.
Ooh, and that's a 4 on the die. So that's 3.
Yeah, he goes, nah, I'm just going to trade notes with Robert when y'all come back.
I mean, that's totally fair.
You would not get to juicy details like you do.
After the demon shrine thing, you know, going to the mountains? Probably not.
But that was cool.
Probably not. I almost died.
So did also, I, but like you don't see me complaining.
Otho, Letho, and Madeline will come with us.
You hear just muffled. It's because they start have their paper mache masks on.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've made your provision buys, yes?
We have made our provision buys.
And the last thing Stabman is going to do is I'm going to give Arthur Broadbear a plate of delicious home-cooked food.
Aww.
Because
just like
NPCs
Luke does in real life.
Need to eat too. And then I'm also going to bring the second plate now up to Brosh.
Yeah, Brosh is still doing some divine sensing. He's doing something up there. He's going to leave soon, but yeah, he's you know pretty focused on trying to ascertain exactly what is happening here. Seems to be staring pretty intently at Fortson. Breaks out of his Brosh breaks away from his concentration and graciously accepts a plate of elk slab.
I know it's his business. We do not get time to eat all the time, so just looking out for you.
Well, and don't worry, I put a big old dollop of sweet baby Ray's on there, so.
Ooh.
You need some Corkies.
Yeah, some Corkies as well.
Corkies dry rub.
Brosh says, well, canonically, I'm a KC masterpiece mine, but I'll accept whatever.
Oh, you're one of those people? Okay.
Well, fuck you then.
The worst one!
Well, now I feel called out because I like KC masterpiece.
The hot and spicy is acceptable.
The land of the Southern Pyramid Bass Pro Shops.
He takes a big chunk with his toothy dragonborn maw, savors it wholeheartedly, and says,
when we were traveling through the plains, good food was not always easy to come by. I've learned to appreciate meals such as this, prepared by friends and family, not to take them for granted. Stabman, I appreciate this gesture.
You never know what your next meal will be, so every meal should be as good as if it were your last.
As I hold out my hand to give him a handshake.
He has to like wipe it on his plate pan because it's kind of greasy now. And he will clasp your hand as well.
We appreciate what you are doing here, I say as I lean in
shaking his hand.
You give him a little smooch.
you wear my helmet.
You wear your helmet.
You just tap him with your
helmet. A little piece of elk grease drops onto Fortson's.
Rule 34. Stab in and brush the
thing. No.
No, why did I say it out loud? No, it's going to happen.
Hyper masculine.
Yes.
God, they're so masculine.
It's just like a little copy, like trace of Predator.
I guess, yeah, Broadbarrow will chime in here and say, all right, give us a few minutes to prepare your provisions. Let me go grab our rank one initiates, since you outrank them and you can order them around. But, you know, they are your wards on this journey. Robert will be joining you as a scribe. I suppose you can set out as soon as after that as you would like.
I'm going to return back downstairs from our tender moment with me and Bros. And I will look at all of my retainers and I will say,
Otho, Letho, Madeline.
Yeah, boss.
You do not have to come if you do not want to.
Well,
I climb over the railing. We're going to an abandoned platinum mine.
Who wants some free platinum?
Yeah.
You.
This is an extra three-way split.
Well, I mean, it's an abandoned nickel mine. Nickel, pretty useless.
It's an abandoned spider factory. It's where they make big spiders.
At the Hear of Platinum, all three perk up. And then you say nickel, all three of them, like, you know, are crestfallen.
A little bit.
And you say
later.
Spider Factory, and Madeline goes, oh.
You know, we certainly understand if you would rather stay behind, but some brave souls will have to go to the abandoned platinum, I mean, spider factory. So I understand.
I squint with my helmet and I go,
what if you do stay behind? They would never sing songs of you.
They always sing songs of the brave.
You see all three of them go in a corner and then like huddle and all their paper machine masks like clack together.
Crinkle together.
You want to do this?
They turn back around.
After like a full minute of deliberation, they all turn back to you, hands on hips. Nod once vigorously, and Otho says,
we followed you this far. We're not going to abandon you now.
That is what I'd like to hear.
Is it? Is it what you like to hear? Because now it's a six-way split.
No, it's a three-way split. He pays for his own employees.
Oh, true. Okay. Never mind. Yes, welcome. Sure, welcome aboard.
I mostly just get the crumbs out of the bottoms of the cushions and they... They're happy with it.
We do not require payments. We seek only glory and to protect Stabman's good name.
See?
Snarl chuckles out loud.
Well, I would,
idiots.
Lord Stabman, or whatever your title is.
It's actually King Stabman.
Okay, King.
Wait, what? What the fuck? You're a king?
No, it's Prince. What?
Wait.
I have not checked in on my good father in some time.
I thought you were just a knight.
No.
No?
I'm a prince.
Okay, Prince Stabman, whatever. I suggest we start getting everybody packed up and ready to go.
I packed all your favorite coloring books.
They do love their adult coloring books. It really drives away that that ADHD that they developed in their late age. Yep.
They have like sensory deprivation issues from like wearing the fucking helmets all the time.
When they take off those masks, everything seems exceedingly bright and colorful.
It just look like wild men too, with like huge frizzy hair and huge beards.
They have to like roll the beards up into a ball before they tuck them back into the paper mache mask.
Yeah, a little beard basket.
Basket.
At one point, they all had the same Stabman haircut, but. You know,
who knows? They have nobody seen their faces in a little while.
It's true.
They only reveal their faces to each other.
Actually, three
not even
kobolds.
Each one of them is three kobolds in a trench coat.
Who knows what they are?
They're actually like all like high ranking like elders in whatever land Stabman comes from. They're the ones like advising if he's actually king worthy.
It's probably, yeah, been so long, Stabman might not even remember what they look like.
It's true. Stabman has been on the run for like the past 15 or 20 years.
Yeah, I'd basically go talk to Robert, see what he has to say, and then gather up the scoots and get everyone ready for travel.
Yeah. It doesn't take you very long, since all the materials and, you know, everybody is here at the HQ already. So it really only takes about half an hour for Robert the Scribe and a couple of the rank one initiates to arrive with, you know, packs on their backs ready to set in the mountains full of the provisions that you had requested of Broadbarrow to borrow on your journey.
All right. In that case, I think we can...
I think we're going to call it here.
Oh, that was me saying, that was just Gnarl saying, oh, we can head out. But if you want to just find us out instead, we can just cut this little 30-second...
That was me saying we're going to Meyrin tonight.
Does anybody have a funny quip to sign us off on? Any jokes about Meyrin? We already talked about Otholetho and Madeline at length.
Fart noise.
Is Meyrin one of those towns you... what's Vegas's tagline?
The what tagline?
Vegas's tagline.
Okay.
What happens
in Meyrin stays in Meyrin?
You know,
or is it literally just a one-shot town?
It's usually because the people who are born there die there. So yeah. That's why what happens.
It's like Central Ohio. Okay.
Yes.
Robert's like, yeah, Marin's sort of a pass-through town. Nobody really stays there.
They don't even have to come and go.
Oh, no, they have one of those.
Oh.
Because, again, you might die when you leave and you go to the mountains. So, you know. He winks.
One of those. Oh, I thought it was like a place to get feed for your mules and that kind of thing.
For any listeners who are not from
Colorado.
Come and Go is a real gas station.
I learned that spelled the first K-U-M? Time when I moved through Nevada and was just like, are you fucking kidding me? The Come and Go, spelled by the way, this is important, K-U-M.
Yes.
N-G-O.
Yes.
Come and Go.
Come and Go.
Just like in and out.
Yeah.
There's proposals for a Cluckin' Hut, Cluckin' Bell.
I'm sorry.
Version.
Excuse
me? KFC Pizza Hut.
Cluckin' Bell?
Yeah. Oh, disgusting. For an in and out come and go.
That's right.
All right. Well, I asked for a sign off and I got it. So
I'm sure you did.
I think I would prefer the podcast version of Come and Go, but it's Come and Tell.
All right. Well, I guess
on that note,
you head into the mountain as the sun is setting over the horizon. To find your way to Meyrin so you can get in and out of the Come and Go before you travel further on a perilous journey through the mountain peaks in the middle of the night.